There we go. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me on such a beautiful day. And thanks for sharing this time with me. And I'm usually kind of nervous before I give a Dharma talk, but I've got to say I'm extra nervous today because my big brother has graced me with a surprise visit. And you know how you want to impress your big brother, right? So anyway, I'll do my best. And anyway, so what I'm talking about today, or what I'd like to talk about today, is bringing our practice to work. I decided to talk about Zen practice and the ways that we can bring our practice to our workplace. I think a lot of us here spend a fair bit of time and energy at the work we do to earn a living. And although the strong focus of our practice is on zazen, or sitting, it is also about bringing our practice into all aspects of our life. As Norman Fisher, our guiding teacher, has said, "I believe the Buddha never intended to create a specialized sphere of life called religion. In his time, there was no question of secular or sacred, church on Sunday, and work during the week. There was only life and life's difficulties and the possibility that with cultivation, one could live with less trouble and strife." It was in that spirit that a number of practitioners gathered every 2 weeks last winter to talk about bringing our practice to work and explored various ways to do this. And I just want to give credit to Megan, because this actually all came out of a conversation that we had last fall, where we were sharing our challenges at work. We have kind of similar jobs, and Megan said, "Oh, you should do a Dharma talk or lead a class on that." So, oh, okay. So anyway, that's what I did, and it was actually really interesting, a lot of fun. So anyway, I'd like to share a bit of what I learned over the course of those meetings. What does it mean to have good work? I would say that one answer you might hear is that good work is a situation where you enjoy praise, healthy paychecks and raises, promotions, prestige, a feeling like we've contributed, intellectual stimulation, and a built-in social group, if you're lucky. I think it can be a bit more challenging sometimes than that. In Buddhism, we expand the concept of good work into something called right livelihood, one of the steps in the Eightfold Path. A quick review in case you've forgotten. The Buddha's first teaching was on the nature, cause, and realizing that there's a way to end suffering. He went on to teach that the way out of suffering was to follow 8 practical steps that involve actions of insight, morality, and mental cultivation. These steps were right action, right aim, right contemplation, right effort, right livelihood, right recollection, right speech, and right view. He taught that by practicing the Eightfold Path, we bring peace to our hearts, we cultivate equanimity, and foster connection with the world. Traditionally, the practice of right livelihood meant engaging in work that did not involve harming life, procuring goods dishonestly, or promoting ill will. I think it's important to aspire to these things and to work toward them as best as you can. But I also think that it's difficult to live completely in a non-harming way in a world where we're connected with all beings. Even an organic vegetable farmer injures and kills insects and birds' nests when plowing her field. Lou Richmond, a student of Suzuki Roshi's and author of Work as a Spiritual Practice, talked about the difficulty of finding right livelihood. And he said, "I do not want to be in the business of ranking occupations on a scale of right and not so right. Like organic food, job choice is a luxury that many working people can ill afford. The ability to choose one's line of work tends to be confined to people with education, social skills, and marketable expertise. For many people, just to have a job at all, any job, is accomplishment enough. We must remember that not having a job is also a cause for suffering and harm, not only to the unemployed person, but to that person's family, children, and friends. When enough of us are ready to live differently, to bring spiritual values to the forefront of our priorities, then a deeper transformation of livelihood can truly begin. In the meantime, my approach to right livelihood is to take the right versus wrong out of the equation and to instead emphasize conscious livelihood. Instead of making judgments about the work people do and ranking it on some scale of spiritual acceptability, I emphasize being more conscious and aware of what we're doing at work." So we took that approach this winter when we were looking at the concept of right livelihood and practice at work. And we explored the idea of what does it mean to have a conscious livelihood. So in preparing for that discussion group, I turned to several books and articles relating to spiritual practice with work. One of these was Lou Richmond's book that I just quoted from. And the other book, which was an important book, was Sharon Salzberg's book called Real Happiness at Work. And incidentally, you can find it on the bargain tables at Banyan. So if you want to take a look. So Sharon Salzberg's book on finding happiness at work came out of her long experience of practice and the many discussions she had with her students over the years. What really drew me to her book was the introduction, where she says, "We can come to understand work problems as a potential source of achieving greater clarity rather than as obstacles without redeeming value, and begin to recognize the true potential of the challenges that work brings our way. In the words of another teacher, maybe problems arise at work not as interruptions or intrusions, but as invitations to gain real wisdom." So this is consistent with a lot of our teaching that we hear, that quite often obstacles and challenges, problems, pain, are actually the material for transformation. So in a workplace, what are the types of obstacles that might come up when we're trying to cultivate awareness or trying to maintain that awareness that we acquire in our meditation practice? So consider these examples, and you might come up with more. We might find that we're struggling with a lack of attention or distraction at work. Our workplace is often an inherently distracting environment. We often have multiple work demands, multiple bosses, electronics, email, computers, telephones, and even other people compete for our attention. So depending on your job, you might have people constantly coming to knock at your door and ask questions. Worry. The workplace or work itself can activate the awesome power of worry. Unproductive worry generally lives in the mythical past, such as why did I do this or why didn't I do that? Or the dream world of the future, such as what will happen? How will it affect me? Will I be able to do my job? Rather than being in the present moment. It can leave us unable to focus on tasks and even disconnect us from the people around us. When we get too hooked into the worry train, any sense of stillness evaporates. A couple of other habits that pull our attention from both our work and ourselves. Multitasking. Research has shown us that multitasking is a myth. We humans can really only do one thing at a time. When we think we're multitasking, we're actually doing one task, then shifting our focus for a moment, regrouping our thoughts, which takes a bit of time, maybe a microsecond, but that's time, and then doing another task. And then we go through that cycle for the next task, and the next task, and the next. So we're not really getting any task done more quickly. We're just doing things one by one, and then taking extra time when we have to reboot to get up to speed on the next task. Boredom, another obstacle to maintaining our sense of consciousness and awareness at work. Boredom is perhaps one of the symptoms of distraction and not paying attention. Meditation shows us that the more closely we pay attention to the details of something, the more interesting it becomes. Lou Richmond's take on boredom is that when we are bored at work, it may mean that regardless of the merit of our work or how important our work is, we have made a conscious decision to shut ourselves off from what is actually going on. With the practice of meditation, we can develop the ability to notice when we're distracted, worried, multitasking, or bored. Once we notice it, hopefully, we can stop, take a breath, and gently direct our attention back to a single task. So just as we do in meditation, as we're sitting and breathing, our mind inevitably wanders or become distracted by a sound outside the door. We gently return to the breath. Maybe at work we can't pull out our meditation cushion and engage in a 30-minute period of zazen, but we can, perhaps, have 10 or 20 30-second periods of zazen. And so what would that look like? And I've got some ideas and some suggestions. Try taking one deep meditative breath before going into a meeting. That's probably less than 30 seconds, but it's a way just to stop yourself. And rather than rushing ahead, just realize that, oh yeah, here I am. Here's my body. Slow your breathing for a minute to something like 4 to 6 breaths in that minute. When you enter your office and sit down, try not to start working immediately. Take a moment to listen to the sounds around you and identify each one without evaluating whether it's pleasing or annoying. And finally, one interesting practice to help deal with worry that I really appreciate is to engage with the worry and discover the question behind it. Quite often, behind worry, we can formulate that into a question, like, what is it I'm worrying about? And why am I worried about that? So, for instance, I might be worried about, oh, I forgot to do something at work. Does this mean that I'm going to be fired or I'm not going to be promoted? And then just try to hold that question. Just allow it to sit in the background without trying to answer it. And you can ask the question periodically and just allow it to be absorbed in your day. Don't try to answer it. Just let it sit there. And you may find that the question changes. And if you're lucky, you may even find the answer. So I have a handout with several more ideas from both Sharon Salzberg and Lou Richmond. And I'll set that out in the kitchen. And you can take that before you leave if you like. If you have some doubts about the value of these short periods of meditation, Sharon Salzberg talks about her experience She said, "I was very encouraged by the mini meditation at work approach as it's worked for me, but I wondered about the benefit beyond the immediate short-term return to peace." She spoke to one of her teachers, a Tibetan meditation teacher, who told her that she could indeed benefit from small pockets of practice. He counseled her to engage in short moments many times as a way to make progress in meditation. So I guess all of this meditation and the benefits of meditation can accumulate and help build awareness in all aspects of our life, not just the short moments at work. Aside from the insight and attention we cultivate through meditation, one of the other important qualities we cultivate in our practice is compassion. The quality of compassion is often at odds with the usual perspective that a successful career is based on competitiveness, survival of the fittest, and individual achievement. No doubt this works for some people, but I'm not sure what the personal cost is. The competitive perspective is kind of amazing sometimes because as a species, humans have only survived for thousands of years because they learned how to cooperate. We're not particularly strong, and we don't have big claws or teeth. So even though we're intelligent, it won't do us much good if we're pointing our spear at the wolf in front of us, while the rest of the pack sneaks up from behind. We need other people to watch our backs. And developing cooperation really depends on the presence of compassion and understanding that other people need you as much as you need them. So work, by its very nature, is about addressing the problems of others, whether that's tending to the needs of an ill person, making repairs to someone's home to make it safer or more pleasant, or saving the planet. We wouldn't have jobs if there weren't problems to attend to. Sometimes it's easy to work with the challenges, and other times it's really difficult. We need compassion to help us understand what a person or what the planet requires. Compassion is called for in order to understand our responses and needs in relation to work. Compassion is envisioned and cultivated in different ways by the various Buddhist traditions. In Zen practice, compassion is considered the fruit of wisdom, of deeply realizing our seamless connection with everything else in the universe. Compassion and wisdom have been called the two wings of a bird. One wing is of little use without the other. As wisdom grows, compassion grows, but we can cultivate it at the same time as we cultivate wisdom through our meditation and learning. But how can we work with the challenges that are presented to us at our jobs? Those moments when compassion is seemingly cut off. And what can we do to transform these into a greater sense of compassion? We can consider these obstacles that might include things like judgment, disconnection and defensiveness, self-blame, or praise and blame of others. So with judgment, we have no choice about who we get to work with, whether that's the people around us or our clients or bosses. We can spend a lot of energy noticing and reacting to this difference or to these problems, or choose to shift our focus to something else. So how can we do this when we're faced with a challenging person or a person who we find difficult to get along with? Here are some practices to consider. Contemplate your judgments about another person. And does the judging offer you some distance from that person? Does it protect you from that person's negativity? What is it in you that feels a need to push yourself away from the other person? How hard is that push? And does it offer protection? And ultimately, what does it protect? It can be challenging to transform judgment into self-awareness and compassion. But the more we can do this, the happier we and the people around us can be, and the better our work can be. See if you can look beyond the tasks and goals needed to that are needed to be accomplished at work, and try to see the common human goals. In other words, the goal of being happy and free from suffering, because ultimately that's what we all need. Disconnection can also be another factor that cuts off the practice of compassion. Disconnection and defensiveness are often about protecting our desire to be seen as excellent, even perfect workers. As a result, we may push people away rather than be more forgiving of our own limitations and asking for help if we need it. One way to shift the energy when we feel we're taking other people's behavior personally is to be more curious than confrontational. Be curious about the feelings that arise, as well as curious about the feelings that may be arising in the other person. So praise and blame. The workplace is situation filled with praise and blame quite often. And that can include self-blame. I think we all struggle with self-criticism. It can include blaming others. And we can also spend a lot of energy seeking praise beyond just accomplishing a task or getting the work done well. We often focus, when we think of self-blame, we often focus on one negative comment we hear about our work and not about the 99 positive comments. I think this comes from an excessive attachment to how others value us. We can try to exercise compassion by moving away from this criticism of oneself. When we find something at work that's difficult, and just accept that there is a problem that needs a solution. Notice that when you say, "Why can't I do better? Why can't that other person do things differently?" that you're actually adding something extra to the reality of the situation, and it's something extra that may not be helpful. Try to focus instead on how do I solve this problem? Just as in the tendency to engage in self-blame, compassion would move us in the direction of trying to solve problems and shift the focus from the personal to the practical. When we stop being caught in the cycle of praise and blame, we can work with far less stress and no longer confuse who we are with what we do. So I hope that by exploring the idea of bringing both meditation and compassion to work, that we can find more meaning in our work and bring a more open perspective than that offered by cultural norms. We can remember that the job we do has less to do with our true self than the way we do it. Bringing our practice to work, we can remember that we're more than our paycheck, our reputation, or our position. We're human beings who want to be fulfilled and free at work and in the rest of our lives. This more open perspective can, I hope, provide us with a new way to measure happiness at work and define the idea of right livelihood. Thank you. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions.